Jason. Yeah, well, today is a very interesting Sunday. It's a technology Sunday. We normally have like medical Sunday or education Sunday. It's a very Anglican thing where we want to commission and remember people who are working in those industries, in the marketplace as well. But today we're going to do a bit different. We're going to dedicate this Sunday as Technology Sunday. I wore this shirt. It looks like a bit like a circuit board, don't you think so? Okay. But you know, we are surrounded by technology. Immediately when you wake up, what's the first thing that you grab? Your phone, right? That's technology. And we are surrounded by everything. How you come to church, the transport that you took is made by technology. And even right now, the Wi-Fi, there's waves bombarding us. We are wearing technology. The fabric that I'm wearing is made by technology, the smartwatch and so on. So our life is full of technology. But you know, we have God, and God is, there's certain values of God that we can learn from technology. So today we are very happy to invite Keith. Keith is no stranger to us. He's a member of our cathedral. He just finished his studies, but I asked him to talk more about himself. So welcome, Keith. By the way, yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Let's give him a warm up. So Keith, tell me more about yourself.
Yes, thank you, Harley, and the rest of the service for having me. So I was born, baptized as an infant here in SAC a long time ago, much like Royce last week, and I was also confirmed here. But it was much later during my national service that I started thinking about my faith and how I could live out my faith. And so it was around that time, because NS gave me a lot of time to think about these questions, so it was around the same time that my mom asked me to join BSF International, so that's Bible Study Fellowship, for those of you who don't know. And so I started attending in 2008, in my second year in NS. And we were looking through the book of Matthew. And I remember that when I was looking at, we were reading the Sermon on the Mount, chapters 5 to 7, God spoke to me in a way that he had never spoken to me before. I felt like as I was reading the Sermon on the Mount, I was thinking to myself, you know, these really are God's words written to me and for us. And it was around that time that my faith sort of shifted, and it changed from something that I had inherited from my parents and my family to something that I decided was right for me. So that was my faith journey then. And so then I went to NTU, and I joined the Christian Community crew over there. And it was around that time also that I discovered that I had a passion for theology and religion. So I started to consider whether or not I would go overseas to study theology and religion. And I did, in the end, go to Durham University to study for 2 years. And I chose Durham because there was a Presbyterian minister who recommended that place to me. And he did his PhD there, and now he's teaching at TTC, New Testament. So I spent 2 years there, and there were actually three other Singaporeans who were doing PhDs in theology there as well, and they're all ministers. So I received a lot of advice, mentorship, and help from them when I was there. And so after Durham, I went over to specialize in science and religion at Oxford.
Yeah. Okay, so science and religion, that's a very interesting subject to choose. What made you choose this topic, science and religion?
Yeah, so there are two reasons. So the first reason is the general one. I think that science and religion is just something that everyone's interested in. Anyone who has faith has always had questions in this area. And I realized that at least within theological departments, there have not been a lot of specialized teaching and researching units in this area. And so there's a bit of like a gap there that I wanted to contribute to. And the specific reason was that when I was at Durham, there was a Methodist minister, Reverend Professor David Wilkinson, who was teaching science and religion as an undergraduate course. So I was auditing his class, and then later I got so interested that I asked him to be my supervisor. And then after that, he told me about the graduate program in Oxford. So I went over and I applied. Because the graduate program just opened under the new chair, Professor Alistair McGrath. I think though some of you know who he is. He has like three PhDs, one in science, one in intellectual history, and one in theology. And so I went over to be supervised by him in Oxford for 1 year. And yeah, that was very enriching for me. So yeah.
Okay. You know, a lot of people say, oh, science and faith is not compatible. How do you address that issue?
Okay, so before I answer that question, I just want to say that in academia and in scholarship, we don't really deal with questions like that. That's something that I think an apologist, someone who's trained in apologetics, might offer a more meaningful and a better answer to that question. So, you know, as academics, what people do is that they focus very narrowly on very specific topics. So it's very common, if you did like a PhD in New Testament, to focus on just a few verses or just one word. Like I know someone who just focused on one word, glory. But
Okay,
having said that, there are still some points worth mentioning. So as believers, we don't think that faith and science operate on the same territory. So we don't think that as one progresses, the other one necessarily recedes. That is to fall for something called God of the Gaps. So God of the Gaps is basically this idea that whatever we can't currently explain by science, we inject God's creative action in there. And that's problematic because it becomes embarrassing for the believer later, after scientists find some mechanism to explain that phenomenon. And then believers have to admit that God wasn't actually working in that situation. So the way to think about science and religion really is two complementary ways of explaining the world around us. And the example that a lot of apologists like to give is the example of love. So, you know, we say that just because we can explain love as biochemical processes in the brain, it doesn't mean that we can't also explain love in more holistic terms. Like, you know, I like the way you walk, I like the way that you talk, stuff like that. And faith, furthermore, faith can offer us a context for doing scientific work. In obeying God's command to exercise dominion over the earth.
Can we have the slides, please?
Having dominion over the earth and
technology.
You can just take a look at them in your own time. Let me just go on to the next one. It's the same thing.
Oh, okay. These are all Bible passages.
Yeah.
You want to explain Genesis? What all this?
These were the commands, the original commands that God gave to the first human couple, Adam and Eve, about taking care of the Garden of Eden, having dominion and stewardship over the earth. And those are the commandments that,
okay,
at least part of it still holds to us today because, yeah.
So will you say that Adam and Eve were the like early first technologists on CITES? I'm going off script a bit, right?
I don't really know how to answer that question.
But these are all the interesting commandments, yeah. Right? God gave commandments to Adam and Eve to take care of the garden, to nurture, to make it grow, and so on.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's a bit of technology, right? Science is involved.
I'm sure there'll be some technology involved, like agriculture, things like that. And in Matthew chapter 22, we see that the greatest commandment for believers, or at least the way that Jesus said it, was you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments, loving God and loving your neighbor, depend on all the law and the prophets. So Genesis 1 and 2 and Matthew 22 offer us a framework for and context for doing scientific work. And so scientific methods drawing from observation and evidence can help us to perform these things better than if we didn't have these methods. And in fact, historians of science have argued, I think some of you know this, that Christianity and modern science were sort of like natural bedfellows. So modern science was influenced by the Protestant reformers' approach to interpreting texts. They believe that because nature exhibited a regularity that we can understand, many groundbreaking scientists or natural philosophers before the 1800s had some sort of faith and wrote about how their faith provided context for their work. So there are a lot of examples. I can just give a few. Isaac Newton, Galileo, Nicholas Copernicus, Johannes Kepler, Michael Faraday, William Thomson or Lord Kelvin, Robert Boyle, Antoine Lavoisier, and all these people had some sort of faith that provided context for their work.
They were all Christians, scientists, as you were saying.
I think it's more better to say they all had faith, because if you read their writings, you know, their theology might be a bit,
But you were saying that science and religion were bedfellows. That means
they grew up from among each other.
There's deep understanding, deep context, in terms of the context of the faith. But these days, people argue that, science and religion is not compatible because of what you shared. Science interpret regularity, but faith, we talk about miracles, like the parting of the Red Sea, water changing to wine. That is scientifically not possible. How do you address that?
That's a really good question. I think that's something that we can talk about another time, because we need to go quite deep into that. So yeah, maybe okay. If you'd like to have me back in the future.
Okay. So just for you to think about, yeah. But I think generally we like what all this very these people they use faith. They have the context of faith, and they provide. They were innovators. Am I correct? They used technology. They yep. created technology.
Small science, yeah.
To benefit society, to benefit humanity as well. And they had God. They have God in mind always. Am I correct to say that?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. I'm just trying to. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Okay.
Can I just say something? One thing more. Yeah. So let's just really quickly look at the example of one person, Francis Bacon. So he was a 17th century, and he lived in England, and he inherited the theology of the reformers, who believed that the fall had effects on human knowledge. And so, quoting from Peter Harrison's book, he saw in the sciences the prospect of restoring or at least repairing losses to knowledge that had resulted in the fall. And so he invented Baconian induction, which is basically...
What induction?
Baconian induction. based on his own name. So,
okay, Baconian.
Yeah, so strict induction from individual facts to more general laws. And this is basically an early version of the scientific method.
Do you know, anyone know about Baconian induction? It's some sort of baking. I only know bacon, but not bacon. Okay, but used in what field again?
Sorry?
In the scientific field? Or?
It's just a scientific method. You look at facts and then you infer laws.
Oh, I see. Okay, yep. So just a theory, principle. Yep. All right. Okay.
And all of this stuff was written in Peter Harrison's book, The Fall of Man and the Foundations of Science, which I highly recommend if you're interested.
So he's proposing that we need to reclaim that because we have fallen knowledge. Our knowledge is, we live in a fallen world, so our knowledge is in a way corrupted. And
that's the way many of the scientists conceive their work.
Okay, so basically what he's proposing that we need to reclaim that, we need to redeem it?
Oh no, I mean, as a historian, he's just giving us a description of what happened, so he's not exactly talking about theology.
So how about your personal view? Do you think how shall we reclaim or redeem knowledge that in this fallen world?
Well, I think, science and technology and other forms of knowledge can just be done within the context, which I mentioned just now, Genesis 1 and Matthew 22, that kind of context of, you know, loving your neighbor and things like that.
Let's talk about this loving God and loving our neighbors. Yeah. How do we are commanded to love God and loving our neighbors. How do we use our knowledge in terms of technology and science to love God and to love our neighbors? I'm jumping the gun a bit, right? Yeah. He's very well prepared. He gave me the answers to what I'm going to ask him. But we are going to go a bit off script and just have a more dialogue, okay?
Okay. So can you say your question again?
You know, we talk about knowledge. Yeah. So how do we redeem the knowledge for loving God and to love our neighbors in terms of science, in terms of technology? Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, we can see God's character as we can see resonances of technology in God's character as a joyful creator. And so...
Okay, let's talk about that. God's nature, God's character in technology.
Yes.
Can you see God in technology? Can you see God in your handphone, for example? What do you think? Let's make it a bit more interactive here. All looking at me blankly. Okay. Yes, you can see technology, you can see God's nature. What is God's nature? Maybe we'll ask Keith to elaborate more.
I mean, there are some places in the scriptures that we can appeal to. So one of them is in Proverbs, and here he's wisdom is being personified, and she's speaking about God. And so the Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of old. And in the last two verses, we see, I was beside him like a master workman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, in his inhabited world, and delighting in the children of men.
So Wisdom is being personified here.
Yes, wisdom, so, Lady Wisdom.
Okay, Lady Wisdom. So how does that relate to our lives in technology?
Yes. Well, Lady Wisdom is as you can see in the final two verses, I was beside him like a master workman. And that word workman, Amon, is used elsewhere in the Old Testament many, many times to refer to things that are trustworthy, reliable, permanent, and true. And so that's an aspect of the nature of God's creative activity that we can see resonances of in technology.
Okay.
And that's not just in the... And you can also see that in the New Testament. So in Acts, we see the word... Because, you know, the New Testament was written in Greek, so the word techne was translated trade in this passage over here. And we can see that this is how Paul paid the bills while he was reasoning in the synagogues at every Sabbath. And also we can see in Hebrews where techne is attributed to God when Abraham was looking forward to a city whose designer and builder is God.
So God is our
we see in his
designer,
character.
He's our character, he's an innovator.
It's part of his, it's part of
his. How he command us to build, to just enrich the world in that sense, okay?
Yeah, so we should value technology that serves these purposes.
You know, some argue that technology is not so good.
Yeah.
And they go the other extreme, like, for example, the Amish community in America, or the Quakers, who reject technology. They go, they prefer a more simpler life. They don't have television and so on. They just, what do you say about that?
So, like, believers who don't use technology?
Yeah, they want to be out of the grid. You know, like, they think the apocalypse is coming, so they want to be out of the grid and so on. So how do you...
Okay, so I haven't really prepared for this, but I can acknowledge that there is ambiguity in technology. And can I give some examples from other places? Because the Amish thing, I've not really been looking into.
No
problem. So let's see what's next. Okay, I can skip these. Okay, so we can also see, just now going back to your previous question, we can also see the value of technology for the early believers. So around the time of Jesus, the Old Testament was written in scrolls, and they were kept in the synagogues. And so when we read in Luke chapter 4, when Jesus was reading the Isaiah scroll in the synagogue, he unrolled the scroll, right? And that's, I think, incredibly inconvenient. I mean, imagine if all your books were in scrolls. That would be, how much harder life would be for you. But by New Testament times, after the New Testament had been written, in the second and third centuries, the scribes began to copy the New Testament into codices, which are parchments that are stitched together, and they closely resemble our modern printed book. And this was how the New Testament was more easily read and circulated among believing communities around that time. And so we can see that, you know, the early believers valued technology when it served the purposes of understanding, articulating their faith more. And we see it today as well with, like, audio recordings of sermons and things.
It's
like
quite incredible. Now you have the entire Bible in your hands.
Yeah, Bible software.
So don't forget to download the Bible app, Bible in 1 Year. Maybe one day we should provide free Wi-Fi here. What do you think? Okay, but it will probably crash our system. Okay, anyway, yeah. So you were saying that...
Ambiguity in technology. Yes. So the two main things in technology that seems to be in the news a lot now is AI, artificial intelligence, and transhumanism.
Speaking of AI, there's a... You know, Dan Brown recently wrote a book. It's called... The title is The Origin, if I'm not mistaken. Have you heard of this new book by Dan Brown? He was mentioning that humanity no longer need God. They just need technology. And there's like a collective mind, like transhumanism. So it's even a... Dan Brown is a fiction author, okay? Just to remind you guys as well. Go ahead.
So I think we all know what AI is, right? It's basically, you know, algorithms that help machines to perform what they're supposed to do more effectively and efficiently. And with AI, we can solve some of the world's most pressing problems, like people working in sweatshops, replacing people working in sweatshops, things like that. But it is also very disruptive to the economy. Like, for example, let me just see what's next. Yeah, so just looking at this one, 2016 Deloitte Insight report said that over 100,000 legal roles will be automated in the next 10 years. So I mean, and in 2013, some Oxford academics predicted that half of all US jobs are at risk of computerization. So there's certainly challenges to AI that we need to look into.
So technology can benefit humanity,
yes.
But it can also take our rice bowl. It can affect our livelihood and so on. Yeah.
We have to consider how it can work to help us rather than destroy our livelihoods.
Something for us to think about. Yeah.
And the other big worry we have is transhumanism.
Transhumanism.
And what you were saying just now.
That's a really big word. What does it mean?
So transhumanism is a very, very big movement. But so the one that we should focus on is the most extreme people in that group who seek technology as a way of supplanting all the traditional goals of faith. So some of them say things like, you know, if we can upload the brain and the consciousness onto a computer, we can become immortal. And you can see why that's problematic for faith. As you can see in Genesis 3, the origin and the height of sin is to put ourselves in the place of God. And you can see
building ourselves.
That's right. Like Adam and Eve, the first couple, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And that was, and we can see that again in the Tower of Babel, when the people who were living in China said to themselves, let's build a tower and make a name for ourselves.
So basically you're saying that we are becoming like our own God using technology. By the way, have anyone watched Lucy, starring Scarlett Johansson? Lucy is about this person who eventually became a computer, a supercomputer. And that's what's happening in the influence of technology, that technology is our God. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So, moving on.
Yeah.
Biblical principles. So how can we draw... we talk about biblical mandate for technology.
Yeah.
Maybe we talk...
Okay, so if biblical mandate is something that has special theological meaning that I'm not familiar with, then I'm not qualified to answer that question. But if we're just talking about whether or not we can, as believers, use technology, and that's consistent with our faith, then I think the answer is yes. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be careful either. Like you see this passage in Colossians. Paul is talking about not being taken captive by human traditions according to the elements of the world. And that word, elements, refers to, at least in that time, it refers to the elements of nature that were understood by people at that time. And you can see there's a sort of connection between that and some versions of transhumanism, which is that if we are nothing but mere elements of nature, then the only meaning, purpose, and direction we have in life is the meaning, purpose, and direction that we create for ourselves. And so that allows us to transform nature, to transform human nature, to do anything that we want.
We become our own gods, demigods.
To become immortal, to pursue endless consumption, things like that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we do have to look out to that. Okay. But there are some positive examples, like the former provost of NTU, Freddie Boy. He combined his interest in his specialism in materials engineering with his concerns for medicine to invent biodegradable heart stents for people who suffer from cardiovascular diseases. And he has since invented a lot of other medical devices that have been sold all across the world. So these are some positive examples that we can take in terms of how we should consider...
I know of another example of, for example, people with autism. By the way, in Cathedral, we have an autism ministry. It's called Shalom Kids. And some of these children are non-verbal. They're not able to communicate. But... So they use computers, they were able to communicate using computers, even their smartphones and so on. And recently there's this video of how a parent was able to communicate with his own child after many years of not being able to communicate verbally. And this child suddenly using technology was able to express her emotions, how she feels, and just so amazing.
Yeah, that's great, yeah.
Okay, so... I think this is our last question, right?
Yes.
My last question is, what kind of principles can we draw, good principles that to apply in technology, how we engage technology on an everyday basis for lay people like me? How what kind of biblical principles can we draw?
Okay, so when we're talking about biblical principles, I prefer not to be didactic or anything, and I think we have to be quite careful when we talk about interpretation. I think that when we read the scriptures and try to apply them for our lives, we have to try and take two steps. So the first is to consider the context, who wrote it, to whom, and for what purpose. And then after that step, then we can move forward to how that might apply to our own lives and to the church community. And for that purpose, this is not a direct answer, but I do recommend some books that have really helped me along the way. I'm sorry, I'm going to skip this. Yes, this one by Gordon Fee, How to Read the Bible for All It's Worth. And the second one was a Bible study commentary that was standard textbook for my time at Durham, and it really, really helped me to gain perspective on the contexts and the world behind Scripture, and I really do recommend that you check it out if you also have the time. Yeah. So modern technology, like modern science, is not something that concerned the biblical authors because it was not something that they knew about, because they weren't living in our times, and so they couldn't be concerned with it. And they only knew that they had to be faithful to the witness they had been given. And I think anyone who seriously studied the Bible and the scriptures and the history of Christianity can see that the Bible is not an engineering textbook that we can derive mathematically precise axioms for application in all times and places. It's something that we have to appropriate and discern. We have to learn how to discern and live out the promises of Scripture in our own unique time and place, which is 21st century Singaporeans living here. So that's not really a specific answer, but I thought I mentioned that.
So to understand that the Bible is not a technology or engineering book, it's not even a scientific book.
It's not.
It's a book, it's a manual for how to live out our life spiritually, but there are certain principles that we can draw for ourselves.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So things like, we should not pursue technology to achieve secular salvation. We shouldn't follow the agenda of the transhumanists.
Treat technology like the end of everything.
Yes.
But use it as a tool.
Yes.
To further our our biblical mandate. Yeah.
Yes.
By the way, we are in the midst of Mission Month. October and November is our Mission Month, and Technology Sunday is part of that Mission Month. How we can commission those who are in technology. Just a quick survey. Who is working with technology? You're an IT specialist, an engineer, a scientist, in research. Just a quick hand.
No one?
Okay, some few. Okay, Jasmine at the back, and just a few. And how about the rest of you? What do you guys do? Technology company? Anyone serving in a technology company? Okay. Anyone who are students thinking of pursuing a career in technology? Okay. How about the rest of you? Undecided. Okay. All want to become Bible scholars. Amen. Yeah, okay. Anything else to add?
No, that's it. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Okay, let's give Keith a round of applause. Yeah. I know it was a pretty hard topic, and I think we want to do something different and to just elevate technology in our Christian community. Yeah. That technology is really a tool to be used by God. And let's turn to Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. What is the knowledge of the Lord? How do we promote the knowledge of the Lord? That is our biblical mandate. When God gave us that great commission to preach the good news to all creation and so on. These days, we're living in a very exciting time where news travels very quickly. What's happening in another corner of the world, within an hour, Singapore would have known it. And back then when the early apostles, the disciples were saying, when Jesus comes again, the Bible says the entire world will know. will know and will recognize the second coming. Back then, how do people communicate? It's through scroll, parchment and all that, and it probably take days or even months for news to travel. This day, if Jesus comes to St. Andrew's Cathedral, what do you guys think? Immediately, you'll take out your handphone and start instant storing it or Snapchatting it, right? The entire world, it will be the most viral news ever. Super viral. Jesus, hashtag, I don't know what hashtag we use. Hashtag, Jesus is, what? Jesus is back. Jesus is back. It'll be just an amazing, amazing event. And technology will be that conduit, will be that tool to promote His glory, to spread His glory. So today on Technology Sunday, I just want to encourage all of us who are in the technology field that your work, your vocation is of great value to God. Maybe some of you are in telecommunications, some of you are in IT, programming, whatever, doing research. In a way, you are like missionaries in promoting God's value of innovation, values of creation, values of bettering this society, transforming this society. So I'm just going to invite the worship team. We're going to sing this song as a song of commission. Thank you, Ian. Ian. Keith. Ian is his brother. Let's give him another round of applause. Yeah. Technology is generally more reliable, but the person handling technology is not so reliable. But again, as we reflect on what has been shared, the knowledge of God will cover the earth as the water covers the sea. We need to think about that. How can we be a part of that exciting activity? How can we fill this earth with His knowledge? All of you have the knowledge of God. You know, in our simpler terms, even the use of our social media, you can use that to spread God's love, to connect with someone who's perhaps lonely, using technology. Just a simple message, hey, how are you? Via WhatsApp or whatever technology. You can use that you can be an agent of God's love, God's peace and mercy to people. So I just want to, let us rise and we're going to sing this song. It's a song of commission. Especially those who are in the technology field. Maybe in engineering and information or whatever field you are in. And sometimes you are wondering, why am I here? What's the purpose of my job? What's the purpose of my career, of my research? And you feel so alienated. You don't feel there is value or worth in your work other than earning a good sum of money, aiming to just buy a house or start a family and so on. But I just want you to see it from God's view that you are all worthy to be used by God because we have a worthy God. And God used each one of us. So I just want to invite Cathy to list out in this song as a song of commission that He is worthy of our praise, worthy of our daily grind in that sense, worthy of our research, worthy of our programming, worthy of just our scientific research and so on, that the work that you do is for a worthy cause because we have a worthy God. Shall we sing the song?